Hello and welcome back to Seeking Scale. Andy, how's it going?
It's going. Yeah, it's going. Still getting over like the multi-day hangover right now, where it's like we were down in New Jersey for the sports betting championship, and it was just like a marathon event, really. It's like you start betting on Friday and it goes all the way through Sunday night. And it wasn't like, didn't go crazy or anything, but it's just like, I feel like once I hit 30 and now at 30, a little past 33, it's just like, it takes a bit for my brain to catch back up after that. But actually, event, we can do a quick aside just to give people a peek into the gambling world briefly. So DraftKings puts on this big sports betting championship where it is what it sounds like. It's just a tournament where it's $10,000 buy-in, $5,000 goes to the prize pool, $5,000 is your bank to wager with over the weekend. And then there's just whoever finishes with the most money wins $1 million. And then there's kind of prizes going down. And I was doing pretty well, but it's always hard to describe it to people because first place is $1 million, second is $250,000. So that's a massive drop off. So mathematically, you pretty much need to play for first. And it's not like in daily fantasy, it was like, oh, if that guy would have got a touchdown, I would have won, but I still finished second. It's like, no, like you're betting everything. And so you literally like lose. And so if you play it, what I think is correctly. So it was like, yeah, doubled up three times. So I turned the 5K into 31,000 and then lost like a pretty brutal bet. But my buddy had his last bet, literally is the only thing still live at the end of the tournament, where if he would have hit just one last event, that was a 50-50, he would have turned his bankroll into like 200,000 and would have won $1 million. So that was an interesting sweat. And then it just did not happen at all. So it was
that's ups crazy. And downs.
And then
everyone's
like, oh, yeah. No, so it was like, everyone's like, oh, so like, you did he come in second? It's like, no, he finished with $0. So trying to explain that to my dad was interesting. I was like, we just bet everything and then lost. But we did well, though. We're happy with how we played.
Oh, that's crazy. That's crazy. Was it all like football, like professional sports, or was it like crazy stuff?
Yeah, so the first time they did it, there was no limitation on what you could bet on. So I landed early and then just bet everything on some random La Liga match. The strategy, I don't want to get completely derailed, like the strategy is you want more betting opportunities. The more you can double, the better chance you have of basically not having to take a super long shot to get to first at the end, if you're already in first or close to it. But for this one, it was college football, NFL, and NBA. I did everything for NBA. Saberson just is really good with that. And so that was the angle I took. But it was good. When I was in third, there you could participate in any state with legal sports betting that has a DraftKings presence. But they had a big like watch party in New Jersey. And I was the highest placed person in New Jersey, like at the live event. And so they were like filming me as I'm just like watching myself like lose. But like all this, but they got me when I won one of the big bets to get up into third or second or third, and like did a good interview with them. And when they shared it out on like the official DraftKings account, they tagged SaberSim. And so that was like pretty cool,
that's awesome,
in that sense. So yeah, it was not all for naught.
Living the dream, man. Like gambling like for that. Work, and it's like legit business expense and everything. Like,
yeah, exactly. Exactly. It could be worse. It could be worse, but yeah. How's everything on your end?
Good, man. Yeah, everything is good. Not a ton new on the business front. Like we're kind of exploring some like customer acquisition channels and really like experimenting with a few different things and kind of finding our way with how to attract some more of these like enterprise type clients. So yeah, just kind of, yeah, exploring that, you know, is like a fair way to put it, I guess. It's cool and it's challenging all at the same time. Like we have things pretty dialed in on like regular podcast hosting customers coming in, and that's actually been pretty steady over years. But the private podcasting and really cracking that growth channel is getting better, but like we're looking for that hockey stick kind of thing instead of the like slow, you know, a couple of extra leads a week kind of thing.
Yeah. And I feel like it's one of those areas where it just gets so much harder to find that scalable channel when it's a newer thing and some education has to be involved in it. Because yeah, you can advertise on private podcasting, and I'm sure there's other similar keywords like that, and that can drive some leads, but it's just not everyone's searching for it. So on part of it, it almost has to be a longer term educational play to get the market aware of it. But are you thinking about other ways of, if there's any segments or anything that could be easier or faster to turn around?
Yeah, I mean, I think that like when we look at private podcasting, we put it into two buckets. Like one is the like the corporate side, like using it internally for company podcasts. And it's funny, I was on Mixergy last week. Andrew Warner interviewed me. It was cool. Yeah, Matt from our team set me up with that. That was cool. And he actually mentioned it. You know, he's like, yeah, I'm hearing some of my friends talk about this thing, you know, like companies using podcasts internally. And afterwards, I sat back and thought like, man, if someone like that who's so clued into both podcasting and startups and like corporate stuff is just hearing about this, then like we are quite early to this thing. And that's cool. Like, I'm really glad we're early. That's not a surprise. You know, like when we pitched our investors, they were like, I've never heard of this, but it makes a lot of sense. I was like, yeah, that's like, we hear a lot of that. But we're getting really big names coming and like knocking on our door and booking calls with our sales folks. And so like, that's good. And it's just like, how can we do more of it? And I think the answer is just like awareness. You know, it's not like no one's searching for it. So like either content marketing or like search-based ads are tough. And like, if you get too tangential to it, then it kind of doesn't make sense. But I mean, our plan is just like education and awareness, you know, education, like case studies, like really authentic, you know, helpful case studies and awareness, just like, you know, summits and a podcast maybe, and things like that, just to talk about this stuff and let folks know that it exists. The place where we're seeing like a lot of really cool growth is like in the other segment, which is like course creators, membership sites. I think I talked about that it was going to happen. We released a really big update to the platform we called Automations Engine. It's basically Zapier, or If This Then That, inside Castus. And so you can say like our first integration into the Automations Engine is ConvertKit. And you can say if one of, you know, a dozen actions happen in ConvertKit, like new subscriber completes a sequence, has a tag, makes a purchase from ConvertKit Commerce, any of those things happen, add that person to some private podcast in your account. And so you can imagine like all the other integrations we can do, which we've already kind of like foreshadowed in the app, like Stripe is going to be the next one, right? So like if they make this purchase or if they join the subscription, add them to a private podcast. That's cool because then it kind of abstracts away the platform for people that are using all these, you know, weird e-commerce solutions or whatever, and they can just go direct to Stripe. It also lets people charge directly for access to their content, which is cool, without having to use a membership site. Like if you just want to have like pure play, I want to be a podcaster in charge for my stuff, that's going to be like Stripe hosted checkout page. When someone buys a thing of this product type, grant access to a private podcast.
And then I'm assuming you have, if they cancel, remove them.
Yep.
Worry is probably not the right word, but I could, maybe this is a valid path to go down, but like, I feel like the more membership management you're doing, that can change a bit the company, because like people are, I'm sure people are going to say, if they're using just raw Stripe with you, I could see them be like, oh, like someone wants to upgrade, I've got this other tier. Like, I don't know. I just feel like they're going to have other requests about just like the managing of it. And maybe that's fine. Like maybe I'm overthinking and it's easy to just keep doing it with the, if the, this, then that type approach. But what has been your thought around that? Is it something you are actually considering exploring, or just going to keep it simple?
At this time, we're going to keep it pretty simple, because like I have a hypothesis that I think is right, is the number of people who are going to be really successful just charging for access to their content is going to be really low. The number of people that are really successful, and to me, that means like number of subscribers, a number of people on our platform who already have a membership site or a course or whatever, and they want to plug private podcasting into it, is going to be much higher. And so like we're building most of our integrations to support all these other platforms where people already have something, you know, as opposed to like, you know, Johnny Wantrepreneur who wants to start a podcast and charge money for it. Like, it's just really hard. The chances of finding a successful customer there is just so much less.
And so you're having the Stripe integration is there. in case someone wants to experiment with it, like, awesome, get them set up. But if they start asking more advanced questions, it's like, okay, check out one of these, our other partners. Yeah.
Teachable, no, Podia, ConvertKit.
Right.
Paid Memberships Pro, we just launched yesterday, which is like the WordPress solution for memberships. So yeah, I mean, we're wanting to launch like at least one a month, like through the end of next year, probably, just because like it's a pretty repeatable marketing thing, you know, partner with these folks, guest post, webinars, all this kind of stuff. And are just hoping that like it compounds, you know, that we get like a couple new leads a week for each of those. And soon it's, you know, 20 new leads a week.
How has it gone with ConvertKit or any of the other ones you've launched as far as executing on the more marketing around it?
It's been a mixed bag, to be honest. Like, I think we talked about it before. Like, some of the integrations you do just because you have to do it, you know, like MailChimp. We're going to have to integrate with MailChimp, and I expect nothing out of it, especially now that they're owned by Intuit, or they're going to be. Stripe is another one. Like, I know a lot of people at Stripe. The chances of us being able to guest blog on Stripe is zero, but like it just unlocks so many things. Something like Paid Memberships Pro, or maybe even Podia, that's like a little kind of closer to our level of company. I do expect us to be able to like guest blog and have a webinar together and stuff like that. So, I mean, we come at it with our standard playbook. And if those companies can participate, that's great. If not, like we still have really like a pretty strict order we want to go in. And it's hopefully strategic in that it spans like a bunch of different types of use cases, you know, email, payments, courses, membership sites, and kind of just repeat that with like different tools so that when someone comes in and they say, hey, I want to do this thing, our sales guys can say, cool, we got that native integration ready to go. So,
right. So part of it is helping sell more just by having more of what people are looking for. So there's fewer blockers for new people coming in. But the other side is, yeah, is trying to expose it to those audiences. And you had mentioned paid ads. And I know you're doing some retargeting. How is the paid ad experiment?
Gotten some traction with it. I think that it's just the challenge is like it's such low search volume that you get out of like a good targeting window pretty quickly. So we're experimenting with LinkedIn and AdWords. AdWords performing better just because it's search-based, search intent-based. And LinkedIn is just like demographic, like job title and company type and industry and all that. And that's just a little harder because like really anyone with a decent sized company could be up for this and could benefit from it. So I don't think LinkedIn is going to work. We're going to give it another, you know, month or something and see how it goes. Because really, like, we have a pretty high LTV. We don't need a ton of leads to make this work, but do need to be kind of judicious about paid acquisition because they can get out of hand.
Yeah, it's almost like finding a way to affordably cast a very wide net and then seeing who jumps into it. Because, yeah, with LinkedIn, I don't know a ton about the ad platform, but I just know, yeah, it gets expensive quick because while you might not have a really dialed in persona of exactly who it will be, because by those variables that you can use, it, like, that's not what corresponds to it. It's more like they're aware of this and looking and like curious about and looking for an option and see your ad. It's more through serendipity. But other people might be trying to sell those same people for like some like six figure a year deal.
Right.
And so you're competing against them. And so it's just like not a economical way to cast that wide net. Have you thought more about paid ads on for the other segment you're looking at, the creator side of things?
Not as much. And I'm sure you're like shaking your head to yourself. Not as much because we can do so many other content-based marketing approaches, which I just like and I know better. And like we haven't tapped that at all. That's our plan there is to kind of with each integration, you know, have kind of the standard like rollout announcement content strategy, and then like on an ongoing basis, like success stories and things like that with these integrations. And I think the nice thing about that is like that segment of membership site and course creator folks are really social, you know? And so like a little bit of traction, and it's really like the ConvertKit playbook, right? Like you get a little bit of traction with like a leader or just a vocal person in some of these spaces and they tell everybody about it is kind of what we're hoping for.
Will you be doing any outbound? Like any outreach to some of those? Because that was a big part of, I don't even know if it was in a post or where Nathan Berry from ConvertKit talked about it. But yeah, I feel like that was a big part of it, is just really hands-on sales to to his target people in like different segments, because creators is just such a, it doesn't seem massive, but it's such a huge space that spans all these different ways where you can go into a single niche and there's dozens of people making 6-7 figures a year just in that one. So it's like they all talk, but they might not talk as much from someone who's doing like diet advice versus someone who's doing whatever else may be out there.
Yeah, we're looking at it for sure. Don't have anything in motion yet, but have a call in 30 minutes with the sales folks to talk about it. Yeah. How about you? How are things?
Yeah, it's been busy in the sense that I felt like I haven't quite gotten my head above water, where I just feel like I've been treading water for a long time with just so many things coming at me. And it really makes me just know that I just have to start working more on just building better systems and actually using them and find ways to just, I can't be an individual contributor anymore. And so, yeah, right now we just hired someone to join our modeling team. So they won't be modeling SaberSim. They will be working on the data models, the support models. And so that is really exciting. I mean, I think right now it's just been Matt and Will, and getting another person in there who can, because Will's full-time just the models. Matt works on them when he can, but sometimes he gets pulled in a product and he really has his hands in a lot of things. But getting just a second person who can full-time be on those is going to be amazing, because a lot of it's really collaborative, where it's problem solving. It's like, you don't know, you see we have a bias on number of receptions for running backs, and I don't know, we don't know why. And so you're doing digging to figure this out. And then a lot of times it's going to be some assumption you had somewhere else in the process then has like compounding effects that leads to that. And a lot of it really is just like brainstorming and figuring it out. So getting another brain in there is going to be huge. We're also in the process of hiring another front-end developer. And so what led me down this is, as those things I knew weren't going to slow down, started looking at hiring an executive assistant, when it just like, even if some of the things they're going to be doing is out of my personal life, I think that's fine. The majority will still be business related, but it's just like, there's so much, many time trade-offs of things that, again, they have deadlines, they have to get done, but it's not really moving the business. It's not really even that important to them in the personal life, but like, oh yeah, I've got to go return that modem, or that's obviously a hard one for someone else to do if they're not physically here. But just like things like that, where it's just, they come up, they've got to get done, and I could use some help doing those. And so I think, frankly, the rest of the year is not going to be much slower for me by any means, because everyone's going to be getting onboarded and when the holidays hit. And so I think I'm still going to be juggling a bunch of things, but my focus, I think, going into 2022 is going to be on just taking a step back, saying, all right, we've got the people we need. How do I delegate more to them? What contractors can I bring in to help on the other areas? What are the things I can just say no to? And then how do I just help us all work more effectively? Because we just haven't put in a ton of thought into how we work and manage and all of that. And I think we're starting to pay the price. I feel like it's okay for the team, but I'm definitely paying the price for it right now. And so I think there's better solutions.
So I have two questions. One is, where, if you're able to share, like, where are you going to be looking for like an executive assistant?
Yeah, so it's through, I think it's Tim Francis. He runs Great Assistant. I think it's greatassistant.com. We very early in the process, but so I can't like speak to that. But I have friends that have used that service and gotten good results. And I just like the approach to it, where you're going to get a personality exam. It's like the Colby test. The people that are applying are going to as well, after passing through a few screens before that. They're looking for US and Canada based. It's higher cost, but not crazy. I think the range they're saying is 20 to 25 an hour. And they handle the recruiting. But the piece I like is they also help you learn to delegate better, because that's a big piece of it for me. It's just better figuring out how to do that and who I need. And so that was when, on like the initial intake call, talking with Tim just about what are the things on my plate. And I was like, yeah, a lot of it really is just one-off stuff. And so we talked through some of the examples, and I think it's someone who has like a strong research background or just problem solving. It's like, I can say, hey, this random form came in. I don't know what to do with this. Can you just, like, even if it takes you half a day, like, can you just figure this out? Because I'm not going to right now. And then the longer I wait, the more of a pain in the ass it is to go back and do it. And so I think there's just a lot of those little things where it's like, oh, can you see what this is all about? Or I'm curious about this. Could you just find a different options for that? So I think someone who's excited by problem solving and researching is the right person. And he helped come to that conclusion. And there's some more trainings for me that come along with it. Then they'll help with the job posting and all of that. So I'm definitely excited. And it's just, yeah, I need someone who can be more proactive in saying, all right, let me try to do that. Here's my questions. But like, because when people just wait for me to make the decision independently to delegate to them, a lot of times I just won't. It was like, ah, I'll just do this, or it's not gonna be that bad. I'll just do that. Yeah. So,
and my second question is related, because I've definitely been there. Like, folks listening know I had a VA at the beginning of this calendar year, I guess. Gosh, that's a long time ago. Didn't work out for the same reason, because like I had to spell out exactly the task that they were to do. And like, we don't have that many like rote tasks. Like, we automate, and there are people in on the team that like own a thing to where I don't have to kind of spend time worrying about it. But yeah, I think that having someone who's quite autonomous is like really valuable. I would be curious, like, if you're comfortable talking about it, like, how did this like sense of like, it's kind of like affecting me kind of present itself? How are you feeling about like, not being overwhelmed, or like just having too much to do, or like juggling too many things? Like, what does that look like to you?
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's normally the day will start and like, all right, like these are the big things I need to work on, and I'll start working on those. But then you'll get the pings in Slack and it's like, oh yeah, I did forget about that. Or, oh, I have all these. Because what happened, like, I don't know how everyone else does this, but like, I constantly set reminders for things in Slack of like, oh, I need to follow up on this, or I need to make sure someone else checked on that. They mentioned this, didn't have time to deal with it then. I'll deal with it tomorrow. And so it's like 9 a.m. hits, and then all those just start flooding in the inbox. And then that's when I'm like, okay, like some of these, I like, it's been a week or longer. Like, I just got to get this one done today. And then it's like, whatever I was working on falls to the wayside, and then a call will come up that was scheduled. And it's just, it's been really hard to get focused. And a lot of those things that come up, frankly, aren't that important. And a lot of them, so like when it doesn't impact anyone else, or at least it's like, it's, if someone's asking me for something from the team, like I'll get to that. It might take me a day or two, but I'll get to it. If it's just like some random admin thing, I'll wait. Like, I'll let those sit on the back burner, but they still should get done. And yeah, so it's the backlog of that stuff just keeps getting bigger. And then it gets harder to make progress on the important things. I mean, so yeah, that was really the spot that I'm in, is just trying to sift through all of that. And I think there's more we can do. I think with the current team in place, a good amount of it can get delegated. But there's, and that was the other thing that I started realizing, is that it's just like with a lot of developer posts, job posts or marketing, where it's like, especially for people at our stages, where it's, yeah, the founder or someone on the team is doing 10 different things. And so you want someone that you hire to be able to do 8 of those. And it's like, well, mm-hmm. that doesn't really make sense. And
right.
So there's a lot of these things where it's, okay, it makes sense for someone to run with this, and I should just be more comfortable handing it off. So like with Jordan, I still like to check out his outlines and things for the videos he's creating, but I told him, like, if don't wait on me, like, send it over to me. I want you to be doing their outline too. But at this point, like, I trust the work you're creating. I've seen it. I like, and you get where I'm coming from, but don't wait on me. And just letting people go, just run with things on their own once they've really shown that they're more than capable of doing that. But then there's just like the things where it's like, yeah, I could ask you to do this for me, but it's not that it's not your job, but I think there's higher value things that they should be doing. And I don't want to just shift all of my burden to other people who, frankly, because my goal is to be able to work more, the cliche of on the business, and so that I can work on those higher value things and everyone else can work on their higher value things. And so just like crushing the productivity of Jordan, who's making really good progress on our growth stuff, isn't helping either. So that's where the split has been. So it's like, okay, find out how to delegate some of these things. And then the rest of this, I just need someone who can do the more admin stuff and that kind of thing.
We've talked about this before. Like, I struggle with this a lot. There are things that come in, and some of them, I'm the only one that can do them. And that's really messed up, right? Like, to be a company like ours, where I'm the only one that can do something, is weird and like dangerous to the company. And there's things that come in that, like, I just don't know how to delegate them, you know, because like you're saying, it would just take longer to delegate them than for me just to do it. And like all that stuff. And then sometimes I sit around and say, like, what did I do today? Like, literally, what did I do today? You know, like, I talked to the attorney and I did some admin stuff in Gusto and I chatted marketing and I podcasted. Like, a lot of days that's my day. And it's just like, compared to basically everyone else on our team, they have really tangible things that they do every day. I feel really nervous and guilty about what I do, like, a lot of days. Like, fucking worthless. I would fire me if I knew what I did. And like, I think that's why, like, about a month ago, I just really wanted to do more marketing, because like, I just feel good about, like, oh, I arranged for us to do 3 guest posts this month. That's like something, you know, whether that's like the most important thing or not, like, it's something. And I don't know if that's right or not, but I try to combat that, like, insecurity with kind of just what I think is like decent action, at least.
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, I definitely feel that way at times, but then you have those one decision that you make that has a significant impact, where it's like, right now we're finalizing terms with potentially our biggest partner by an order of magnitude. And like, yeah, that's on me. And like, a lot of times I will drop everything for that. I think if I'm in like a drought of those things where there hasn't been much big news or much big stuff, that's when I feel the guilt more. But it's that idea on figuring out how to raise prices, how to do this, how to do that, like, where it's just like, okay, like that provides more than enough value so that I don't have to stress about it. And that's sort of how I've come to better terms with it. But that doesn't mean on any given day, at the end of the day, when I was like, oh, I didn't get nearly as much done as I wanted to. And it's just, you see those things in Notion for us where it's just like, yep, I haven't touched that in a month. And it gets frustrating. And I think my goal would be long-term getting a chief of staff, because there's a significant difference. Well, in my head, there's a significant difference between a standard like VA, virtual assistant, and an executive assistant. The VA path is one that works really well in productized consulting and things where you figured out, this is like, we know link building, this is our SEO strategy, like, we're going to be doing this every day, and like, we know what we're doing here. We can hand this process off to somebody else. But it doesn't do well on the things that I was talking about. But then beyond that is what I feel like the chief of staff is almost, is yes, like your right-hand person who comes to the meetings with you and can make decisions for you. Because that's what an EA, I mean, on some things they will, but like the chief of staff, in my head, it's they're really making decisions so you don't have to, but they have all the context so that they're able to, and there's someone you can trust to do that. And that's obviously like a very high level position. It takes the right kind of person for that. But I think to me, that's the goal. Because I think the EA will get more sanity back in my life, especially as their team gets bigger and like more, there's more people to delegate to for other things. I think the EA will help just get the really low value stuff. But the chief of staff is what would be needed to, or COO, whatever you want to call it, but is what would be needed to make it so that I'm not the only one who can do something, really. Like you were talking about before.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is not our next hire, but the one after that probably is whatever an integrator, an implementer, whatever you want to call it. I was referred what is a really good podcast called Second in Command. Cameron. Yeah. Really good. It's a guy that runs like a COO alliance and interviews a bunch of like COOs and integrators. I think it's a good next move. I would challenge your assumption, or just check yourself maybe, that your EA is going to be able to take enough off your plate to really make you more effective, as opposed to like a COO or
whatever. I think
I just like
No, those are, I think, dramatically different. And for me, I view the EA as, I don't think it'll frankly make me, it won't change a ton of how I spend my time. It'll get a few things off my plate. It's more just going to make sure that I don't let these dozens of things just not get done. Like, they're going to be able to pick up the mess behind me of the things that I just don't get to. And that will help with me just not feeling like shit when I just haven't responded to this email in a week or whatever else it may be. So that's for the EA. It's more, they're going to come in and just make sure all the things that, not all the things, but a huge chunk of things that I don't have the time for, don't prioritize is a better way of phrasing it, still get done. The chief of staff, I think that's a long ways down the road. And for us, that, yeah, that's where it's someone who can really let me get fully more out of the business. So I think this is the right first step, but yeah, I don't think it'll get me too far down there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, I look at like the analogy of like on the marketing side, like both Matt and Sam, to me, fill that like COO chief of staff thing for marketing. Like, I think I have a lot of the creative direction of where we're going, and then they're the ones implementing it and are in the details of everything. And that's for me the hardest, is like, I had to write a blog post last week, and it was like really hard to get and spend that much like dedicated time creating something. And like, I can't do it anymore, just because I have too many other things occupying my mental space. And like, I can imagine a person that can touch every part of the business with the ability to focus as deeply as I hope someone like that would. Like, that would be the goal for me, is for me to be able to, yeah, have more direction kind of focus, and then be the one to follow up and implement and research and really plan. It's a very different kind of person.
Oh, for sure. And I think, yeah, for us, it's, we'd need that person. We've got Ben and Matt on, either Matt front end and models, Ben back end, and we don't have that on marketing. And so I think for us, it's going to be building out that last piece before looking for that, the integrator, to really help keep the ship running and improve it. But no, I mean, it's definitely a journey, and I can only imagine the difficulty of finding that person and hiring them and all that.
So, no way. Yeah.
We'll get there someday.
Yeah, for sure. Awesome. Folks, have any kind of thoughts or experiences with EAs or chief of staffs or anything of that, shoot us a message, podcast@seekingscale.com. As always, thanks everyone for listening. See you next time.
Thanks, everybody.